Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Cyber attacks pose a greater than ever threat to the American election infrastructure. An attack was launched in November that attempted to insert malicious code into the website of the Ohio Secretary of State. The attempted hack originated in Panama but was traced to a Russian-owned company. Secretary of State Frank LaRose speculated that attacks such as that one are merely probes for vulnerabilities. Rick Ruin covers state government and politics for the Columbus Dispatch. He's been covering this story. Welcome back, Rick.
Thanks for having me.
How was the attempted hack detected?
So the state has a what they kind of refer to as a digital burglar alarm known as an Albert intrusion system. And Secretary of State Frank LaRose said that that burglar alarm alerted them to the attempted attack back on Election Day.
It was right on Election Day, and it was to the website. What's the significance of trying to hack the website of the Secretary of State's office?
Right. So the Secretary of State is the repository for all voter information in the state. So we've got 88 county boards of elections where they handle voter registration, and once a week they will send information up to the Secretary of State's office. They handle lots of information like that and other information that's coming from the boards along with their own data. By attacking their website, what this particular kind of hack would like to do is use that to get essentially behind the firewall. They'll use the information that's being inserted into the website to get behind the website and into the databases that the Secretary of State's office maintains.
And why would anyone want to do that? What's the end game here?
Well, the Secretary of State didn't really tell us what the end game of this particular hack was, but in general, he has said, and we've seen this in other places, that they're essentially trying to just create confusion and sow discord around our elections processes. You know, with this kind of a hack, you can access the information and steal the information. We've seen instances of information being stolen and then kept as a ransomware attack. That's happened around the country where hackers will steal information from a government entity and then hold it for ransom. So it's unclear what the goal of this particular attack was, but there's a lot of different things that they could do with that information.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking right now about the Ohio Election Day cyber attack attempt on the Ohio Secretary of State's website. My guest is Rick Rowan. He's a Ohio politics and government reporter for the Columbus Dispatch. He's been covering the story. Is there concerns about hacking the voter database and monkeying with that?
Well, that could be a concern, and maybe that would be the goal of an attack like this. But the Secretary of State's office was quick to point out that they caught this quickly, they stopped it quickly. Nothing was actually accessed, and it's not the kind of an attack, and really. It's not possible over the internet to do the type of an attack that would change vote totals, for instance, in an election. None of Ohio's voting equipment is supposed to be hooked up to the internet. It's actually against the law to hook up, the voting machines that we vote on here in Franklin County or the tabulation devices to the internet. They're all air-gapped, and so it's not something that could be altered.
Right, but the voter database is a statewide database, right? That's something that's controlled by the Secretary of State's office. If somebody got in and wiped out parts of the database, it would affect people's ability to vote, would it not? Or at least have their vote counted.
I don't know that it would affect their ability to have their vote counted because the like I said before, so the Secretary of State's office has a combined database of all of the voter information from around the state, but that information is populated each week by 88 county boards of elections. So each of the 88 county boards also maintains their own voter database, and that's where you're voting.
Gotcha. Secretary of State LaRose said that this attack was a probe for vulnerability. So it's kind of like a, you know, it's going out ahead of time. You know, is there any sense about, for one thing, how does he know that, and what might they have found?
You know, we didn't get much information beyond that. You know, what we reported, we know that the attack was reported to the Department of Homeland Security and that the Secretary of State's office was working with the Department of Homeland Security. But beyond that, we really don't know much about the attack and how the Secretary of State knows that that was the intent there. I think that, you know, that's sort of what we've seen with some of these similar attacks around the country. This is called it's called a SQL injection, and not to bore your listeners too much, but it's essentially, you know, when you fill out a form on a website, they inject the code into that so that when you go to fill out the form, the malicious code can kind of piggyback on what you're inserting into the form and get behind the website in a legitimate way. That's a similar tactic that's been used across the country. In the Mueller report, Bob Mueller pointed out that the Russians used this exact technique elsewhere. So I think that there's kind of a history with these sorts of attacks, and maybe that is part of, you know, what we're seeing here, that they're looking at that history and maybe applying it.
Is it possible that they're testing stuff like that Elbert intrusion system, that digital burglar alarm that you meant, and figuring out how to get around that?
You know what? I don't know the answer to that question. It's a good one. It certainly seems plausible if we're talking about, you know, probing for vulnerabilities, seeing whether that system worked. But at least according to the Secretary of State's office, in this instance, it did.
Secretary of State LaRose issued a directive this year that requires the county boards of elections to adopt that kind of software, that Elbert intrusion system, that burglar alarm. Is the state footing the bill for that, and have the counties succeeded in adopting it yet?
The counties are making progress on that, so they have a deadline early next year to get through that. The state is providing some of the equipment and software in the directive. The Elbert intrusion system is one piece of a 34-point security directive that the secretary issued. So they need to get these kind of digital burglar alarms, but they also have to do a bunch of other things. They had to change the email system that they were using to help prevent email spoofing, which is another kind of common way that we see these attacks, not just on public entities, but, you know, even in private businesses, this happens all the time. They're also telling the boards that they have to get what they call a black box tool, which is sort of similar to the black box that you hear about in passenger airplanes, but it goes into their computer system. It collects security data from their network devices and their whole system. And so if there were an intrusion, the Board of Elections would know, you know, what activity the was undertaken by the attacker. They need to do all these risk and vulnerability assessments, and they need to work with the Department of Homeland Security on those. So it's really a wide-ranging security directive on elections for next year.
How are boards of elections funded?
Boards of elections are funded
by the counties?
Yeah.
The Secretary of State's supposed to hire a chief information security officer and create a volunteer-based Ohio Cyber Reserve. And I'm wondering if we know of any evidence that a volunteer type of force like that would be, I don't know, reliable, discreet? Is there anyone else out there doing something like that?
Not that I'm aware of. We haven't heard a whole lot about this because it's very early on in their recruitment. So, we'll see. I guess, what they would point to is that, we have a National Guard and that's kind of the model that they're basing this on. But it's, the digital version of that.
Hmm. And as far as hiring a chief information security officer, is that just a chief cyber attack point man or woman?
Yeah. That's exactly right. So you hear about the chief information officer that just about every company probably has at this point. That person sort of oversees the information technology infrastructure within an organization. The chief information security officer would oversee all of the security pieces to that information technology.
Is there a sense, Rick, about the extent to which cybersecurity has become an issue for the Secretary of State's office? Is it like a top priority?
I think if you look at this security directive and some of the things that the Secretary of State's office has been pushing over the last year, it would seem to be something that they're prioritizing. I mean, they ask boards of elections to make some pretty significant changes. When you're talking about 88 county boards of elections, you have a wide variety of technical know-how,
right,
in those counties
and resources.
And so, the fact that the Secretary of State's office is requiring some of the things that they're requiring and trying to work with the boards on that, the fact that the Secretary was pushing for the ability to hire this chief information security officer, it would seem that it's something that the Secretary of State's office is putting a high value on going into 2020.
Has there been any pushback from any county boards of elections that, hey, we can't afford to do this? This is unreasonable.
Not that I have heard, but that doesn't mean that it's not out there.
Hmm. Well, Rick Ruin, thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Ann.
Rick Ruin is Ohio politics and government reporter for the Columbus Dispatch. Coming up, we're going to hear from the League of Women Voters of Ohio and others about these issues of cybersecurity in our voting systems in Ohio and across the country. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. The Senate Intelligence Committee in July concluded that election systems in all 50 states were targeted by Russia in 2016. Most of those efforts were undetected by state and federal officials at the time. With the critical 2020 national election ahead, officials at both levels have taken measures to ensure that eligible voters are both able to vote and have those votes count without foreign meddling. Jen Miller has been following the issue in her role as executive director of the League of Women Voters of Ohio. Welcome back, Jen.
Thanks, Ann.
David Becker is executive director and founder of the Center for Election Innovation and Research. Welcome, David.
Thanks, Ann. Great to be here.
You are both at the National Elections Protections Conference in Washington, D.C. today. David, I guess this isn't just a breakout session material anymore, right?
No, if you go to any conference, whether it's a group of advocates, a group of election officials at the state or county level, pretty much topic 1 through 100 is all cybersecurity, and that's probably a good thing given the threats that are out there.
Do you have a sense that they're achieving any? I mean, that they're achieving goals, that this is making a difference?
Oh, I don't think there's only a sense of that. I think it's an absolute fact that we've made a big difference and seen great improvements since 2016. I think the recent experience that Secretary LaRose talked about in Ohio mm-hmm. is a great indication of that, where an attack that was successful in 2016 in Illinois, a SQL injection attack on a voter registration database, now was detected and prevented using tools like Albert sensors and other things that have been now deployed in all 50 states. More money is being deployed in the states. More states are using paper ballots, like Ohio has been for quite some time. More states are doing audits of those ballots to confirm that that the ballot count was correct, as audits as Ohio is going to do in 2020. So I think we've seen tremendous progress, and voters should go to the polls knowing that their vote's going to count.
One of the things about this, though, Frank LaRose mentioned in regards to this attack, that it was probably, or is it, they think it was, or they know, I don't know, it was a probe to look for vulnerabilities. I mean, the thing with cybersecurity is it's always a moving target, is it not?
Yeah,
well,
absolutely.
Go ahead, Jen.
Jen.
No, I mean, that's the point. We've always needed to defend our election systems from bad actors. And we now have to do that in the digital space as well. And I think one of the great things about Secretary LaRose is actually that he's a Green Beret. So he seems to understand and really care about security issues. And I know Rick was talking about that in terms of the directives. He also provided funding for communities to upgrade their systems. You know, Senate Bill 52 that he's behind, Senate Bill 194 that he's behind. And that's because actually Ohio today, I need Ohio voters to understand that Ohio today is pretty secure, and we should not be worried about our votes being stolen and those kinds of things. But it's not enough to just rest on your past laurels. We must always upgrade our election systems and our election practices for any kind of bad actor. And Secretary LaRose has also incorporated other new rules that are stronger about nepotism, about ensuring that Republicans and Democrats are always managing any machines or any materials at the same time so that there can't be any tampering. We really do have a strong system in place. And I wanted to mention, actually, the risk limiting audits are this idea. It's a best practice developed by statisticians, and that is something that he has championed. We're actually already, we're not waiting till 2020 as a state. We are piloting those now. So we have a pilot in Defiance County and Clark County next week. And how it works is you pull up a small sample size, a statistically significant but small sample size, and you look at the paper accounting versus the computer accounting and make sure the results are the same. If there's an error, you go to a larger sample. If you continue to get errors, you keep going to larger and larger samples, and if need be, you check the entire cast of ballots. So we're not waiting to 2020 to do this, but all of those individuals who are continually worried that our votes are going to be stolen, there's no evidence of that ever happening. Our machines are not hooked up to the internet, and we are using the best practice for auditing those results. And for those who are wondering why we now have this extra paper record, it's so that we can do this, so that we have paper versus the digital copy, and we can compare them.
David Becker, are U.S. elections, is this typical around the world, and at least in westernized developed countries, this kind of complexity?
Well, we're particularly complex, and that's largely because we're particularly decentralized. We don't have a single election entity in the United States that runs all elections, and we don't even have 50 different election entities. We actually have about 10,000 all around the country because of local control. That can make things a lot more complex, but it also is a strength in some ways, as it's hard to target.
Go ahead.
Well, it's hard to target enough of the places to make a real difference in the election. So what we'll see is that in the United States, you can't just change all of the votes with one attack. And again, that's a real strength because of the decentralized system. And you see that in Ohio with the 88 counties for sure.
Well, I'm wondering about the 88 counties, because in Ohio, one of the things about that is our counties are very drastically among them in resources. And I know that Frank LaRose has funded a lot of stuff through these measures, but not all of it. And counties, some counties literally, not only do they not have the material resources, but they don't have the human resources necessarily to achieve these goals.
I think that's right. I mean, I think resources are a big challenge, and we see that across the country. We need more funding from Congress. We need more funding from the state legislatures, because this is not going to happen magically. And money is just one of those resources. As you point out, we need human resources as well. We need skilled people, IT staff who can handle this stuff. However, I would say the leadership of Secretary LaRose, and this is happening all across the country, where secretaries of state are taking leadership to use new initiatives like the cyber squad that Secretary LaRose was talking about. Mm-hmm. This has also been done in places like Illinois. This is a really wonderful way to try to help counties and local election officials provide the kind of IT support that they need to be as secure as possible.
I read a New York Times. Okay, go ahead, Jen.
Oh, yeah, go ahead, Ann. I was just going to mention, as we talk about funding, there is something that Ohio voters can do right now. So Congress needs to pass the continuing resolution by December 20th to keep the government open and operating. Mm-hmm. And within that continuing resolution is an earmark of $600 million for election security funding. So everyone should be calling their U.S. Congress members, as well as Senator Brown and Senator Portman, and asking them to pass that CR, the continuing resolution, with election security fully funded. That will help Ohio, but it'll help every other state. And that's important, because Ohio needs to also know that every other state's elections are secure.
Right. I just was looking at this New York Times article from September, and the experts are saying that if a decision in the full Senate, if they approve a recent committee decision to spend $250 million more to protect the 2020 elections from outside interference, they will have devoted at least $630 million toward the goal since Russia sought to influence the last presidential election. The experts are saying, though, that what they really need is something more like $2 billion to do the job. Pennsylvania alone plans to spend $125 million to upgrade its voting machines. David Becker, I mean, and bearing in mind that this is a moving target, it's not going to go away. Is there enough money?
Well, right now there probably isn't enough money. I don't know that we ever crossed the finish line in cybersecurity where we say we have enough. But I do think that the challenge isn't to fund this on, you know, with a one big chunk of money. Mm-hmm. There's not going to be one big chunk of money that makes this all go away. We're going to need to continually and regularly provide a funding stream to states and counties so that they can pay expert staff, that they can continue to upgrade technology. And it's not just the voting machines. It's also the voter databases and the websites and other technology that's in the system. So what I advocate for, and what I'm hoping that we'll move more towards, is a more regular stream of funding that's specifically dedicated to help state and local election officials provide the kind of cybersecurity that we will need in today's day and age. We're not going to stop using technology. We're only going to become more and more reliant on technology. And there are many good things about technology. I mean, technology has made voting, counting ballots a lot faster and more accurate. And it's done a lot of other good things like online voter registration. But we're going to need to get better and better with regard to cybersecurity if we're going to be able to beat back the threat of foreign interference.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. That's David Becker. He's executive director and founder of the Center for Election Innovation and Research. Also with us, Jen Miller. She's executive director of the League of Women Voters of Ohio. Both of them are at the National Elections Protections Conference in Washington, D.C. And that's what we're talking about, is how we protect our elections process from cyber meddling, at the very least. Jen Miller, what about the county? You know how Ohio... how the counties vary so drastically in resources and human resources. Are there enough experts to go around, even in the state of Ohio, to fix these systems and make sure they're up and running properly?
Well, actually, I think that's one of the great things, is that Secretary LaRose and actually Secretary Husted before him spent a lot of time on training counties and working on the systems themselves to make them as secure and to continue to develop security and integrity measures. Let's remember that the directives that the secretary puts out have to be followed by all 88 counties. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of pieces within there that is actually leaning on federal government provisions. So, you know, running databases, running systems through, you know, federal bodies to make sure that they are as secure as possible. We did make grants to communities as a state for election security. We also just passed $114 million for new election machines last year. That was widely bipartisan. Senate Bill 52 passed unanimously. And that is all about creating new ways to support communities and cyber security and to defend against cyber threats. We have Senate Bill 194. I just want to flag really quickly for everyone. So just like we have voting machines, no county can pick a voting machine that is deemed to be insecure. They have to select from approved vendors that are vetted. That's not the case right now for voter registration systems. And so Senate Bill 194, which has now passed the Ohio Senate unanimously and is before the Ohio House, does just that. It would require that counties also only use an approved registration database vendor. So we continue. What I'm happy about with Ohio is that when it comes to security and integrity issues, we are really committed to improving this process. And I want to make sure every voter hears that, because when voters are worried that their vote doesn't count, they sometimes don't show up. Mm-hmm. And I want to assure everyone that your vote's going to count. But if you have a problem at the polls, or you see something that's a problem, or you're concerned about something, you know, that's what I'm here for. That's what the League does. We are here to help voters and to identify problems, and we take those calls every day of the week. You can find us online. You can find our phone number, and we will help you.
David Becker, NPR reported last week that as the 2020 election approaches, a number of top election officials across the country who oversaw voting in 2016 won't be around by next year. We have a new Secretary of State. Obviously, Jen Miller, you know, you make it clear that Frank LaRose is on top of the issues. But overall, David Becker, are you concerned nationwide that the people with the experience and the know-how aren't going to be at the helm?
I'm not concerned. I think if you look nationwide, all around the country, the secretaries of state at the state level, boards of election, county clerks are as professionalized as they've ever been. There's been a focus on cybersecurity more than there's ever been. We're going to have more non-punch card paper ballots nationwide than we've ever seen since the dawn of the computer age. Every single battleground state, including Ohio, is going to have paper ballots. We're going to see more audits than we've ever seen of those ballots to confirm that the outcome was correct. All of the states deploy the Albert sensors that Ohio used to catch this most recent attack. Mm-hmm. So I see right now, at least the way I see it, compared to 2016 through 2018, in 2018, that was the most secure election we'd ever had up until that point. We saw very few problems. And in 2020, my expectation is despite the threat, despite ongoing attempts to attack, we're probably going to have the most secure election we've ever had.
So what are you worried about then?
I'm really worried about foreign adversaries using our natural distrust of each other and divisions that already exist in our society, including partisan divisions, to get us to doubt our own democracy. The intelligence community, the Mueller report, the Senate Intelligence Committee have all concluded that what Russia was trying to do in 2016 wasn't so much trying to change the outcome of the election by changing votes, but trying to get us to lose trust in our own democracy and the elections that undergird it. And we see this now with continued, you'll see media reports that say the elections are being hacked and that you can't trust the voting machines. There are going to be massive problems on Election Day. There is no one happier when you see that than Vladimir Putin.
And is there evidence? It makes sense that logically that some people don't show up because they don't trust the voting system. But is there evidence that it's been done in any that's occurred in any meaningful way?
So from my perspective, I think there is. There's significant polling that suggests that voter confidence is taking a pretty significant decline and that voters are losing trust in the outcome of an election. There was a recent poll by USA Today that suggested that over 40% of all Americans wouldn't trust that the election was fair if their candidate lost. That's a really frightening statistic in my mind.
Yeah,
we need to have trust in our democracy.
Yeah. Jen Miller, what do you think?
Okay, so if you're worried about our democracy, the answer is not to sit at home. The answer is to get involved. And there's all kinds of ways to get involved to improve our democracy. So first and foremost, you can become a poll worker, right? We need poll workers all over the state during early voting, and we need them on election day. You get trained, you get paid, and you can be there to be the front line. Our poll workers are actually the backbone of our democracy. They're often the ones that find if there's a problem with a machine, if the electricity goes out, if someone's confused about their polling location. Good poll workers make all the difference in the world when it comes to participating in democracy. If you don't want to do that, volunteer for election protection. It's a nonpartisan hotline that the League and Common Cause and NAACP and so many organizations are a part of. And that's the 866-hour vote that probably many of you have heard of. But we have call centers, we have folks in the field monitoring, and that's a chance for everyone to be serving the voters. And I love that because you serve every voter. It doesn't matter how they vote. You're just there to assist them and help them and record problems. And call your officials about the policies that we're trying to get passed. We can do this. You know, democracy is only strong if we all participate, and it's not just on election day as a voter, it's in the systems themselves.
That's Jen Miller. She's executive director of the League of Women Voters of Ohio. We'll continue our conversation with her. David Becker, thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Ann.
David Becker, executive director and founder of the Center for Election Innovation and Research. They are both at the National Elections Protections Conference in Washington, D.C. It's taking place today, and we'll be talking about what they're talking about there when we return. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. With the critical 2020 national election ahead, officials at both the state and federal levels have taken measures to ensure that eligible voters are both able to vote and to have those vote count without foreign meddling. We're talking about those efforts today. Still with us is Jen Miller. She's executive director of the League of Women Voters of Ohio. She is at the National Elections Protections Conference in Washington, D.C. today. Thanks again, Jen, for joining us.
Thank you.
What are you worried about when it comes to Ohio's vulnerabilities? You're very upbeat, and I get the message that we have to have confidence in our systems, but where do you see vulnerabilities?
So I'll be honest, I'm most worried that voters are worried and that they won't turn out. But then my second worry, which I think is funny, is that we're going to have such record turnout that we're going to have like more operational challenges.
Mm-hmm.
I feel as though we are doing everything we can and being quite entrepreneurial to protect our systems, and that we will detect those systems, you know, detect any attacks on those systems and defend from them. I could be wrong, but what I see is a very concerted, focused effort. And I think Ohio, this is one of those times where I think Ohio is a little bit above the curve, where a lot of times we really fall behind. And so I'm really, you know, election security, election integrity, they matter. They matter a lot. And I think operationally we will catch those attacks. I'm more worried about voters and making sure that voters are participating and that they have the information that they need. And I'm worried about having enough poll workers. I'm worried about having enough election protection volunteers.
If we have the turnout anything like it was, say, in, 2008, where there were so many problems, wasn't that the year that their lines were hours long and there weren't enough machines and that kind of a thing?
2004,
2004, yeah. Sorry. 2004. Yeah, of course.
And we have had some, and people may not know this, but we've had some victories since then. Since 2004, there were lawsuits that secured early voting, which has made a big difference. And early voting doesn't just serve individuals who come early to vote. It actually serves everyone on Election Day because the lines are better on Election Day, too, because we're diverting those voters across a 28-day period. Also, there was a lawsuit with the League of Women Voters that had a lot to do with various things from election planning to disability access. And we have a lot of operational improvements that have been made through that lawsuit and settlement as well. But 2020 is big. And 2020 is big because it's one of those where we could see massive turnout, but a question on the, the results themselves. And I am confident, I really am, that we are doing everything we can to be ready. But I think there are things that we could that could be better. You know, if the federal government doesn't pass the continuing resolution with $600 million for election security, I'm more worried. You know, if we don't get enough poll workers or election protection volunteers, I'm more worried.
Is anybody against those issues?
No, this is actually a great thing, right? So we're at a time where partisan divides are so significant, right? Mm-hmm. But Senate Bill 52, which is Secretary LaRose's cybersecurity bill, actually passed with bipartisan support, you know, and so unanimous support in both houses. So I think there is a sense that this needs to happen. We don't see it as much on the federal level, unfortunately. We tried with H.R. 1, which was it was a sweeping package that never went anywhere in the Senate. So I do think making your calls to Senators Brown and Portman about the continuing resolution with $600 million in there for election security is an important thing to do.
If there were new voting machines in Ohio in November, right?
Yeah.
And how did they work?
They actually overall worked really well, and we were very pleased that we were able to get that package of $115 million passed to the legislature in time for voting machines to be rolled out before 2020. Right? So voters could get used to them. In Franklin County, for example, there's now there's an extra sheet that you then have to take to a scanner. Mm-hmm. That's actually great. But we heard some voters didn't like that or they didn't trust that.
Right.
And so, again, I think it's about there's this piece of, if there was a problem with that system, you'd be hearing from all the voting rights groups and the NAACP and everyone that there was a problem with that system. But actually, that's a good system because we have a paper record. You can check your paper record as well as for those risk limiting audits, we can look at the digital data versus the paper record.
Well, there used to be a paper record on the voting machines, but it was inside the machine. You could only look at it. You couldn't touch it.
Right. Well, and the challenge with that is just that it was so tiny and, it's scroll. This actually, we should like this better, even though it's an additional step. And every time we change something, people feel nervous. Mm-hmm. We should like the system better because we can now look at our ballot and see that it was right.
And then you walk it over. There's that extra step. And that, at voting day, people were like, what? This is weird. It's kind of a throwback almost.
Well, I think, if anyone ever has a concern, they can give me a call. They can give my office a call. They can send me an email and we'll talk through it. But I feel good about that system and the voting machines overall works pretty well.
Have you detected any generational, any ethnic minorities versus majority differences in the trust in the system?
That's not something I've polled personally, and so I wouldn't want to speak on anecdote. Mm-hmm. But I will say this. We do see sometimes that new systems or changes in elections can affect individuals differently. So it's less about cybersecurity and more about participation. So when a poll location moves, that can have adverse effects. If you go to your same, you go to the place you always go to and you're on transit, you know, that's going to be harder for you. Maybe you're a person with disability. Maybe you're a young person that doesn't want to own a car. Maybe you're someone who can't afford a car. And then all of a sudden you have to change locations and you're on your lunch hour or something like that. That those kinds of changes can make a big difference for participation. And we're going to see a lot of that actually up in Cleveland on primary day because of St. Patrick's Day. There's all kinds of poll locations that won't be open or they'll be along the parade route. And so this is another reason why we need as many volunteers as possible, doing our best to educate voters to check their polling location in advance, advertising if some prominent locations have been moved. And also the league works with COHIO, which is the Coalition on Housing and Homelessness in Ohio, to do rides to the polls, all for these simple reasons of trying to serve voters who otherwise might have challenges.
What was the logic of switching primary day to St. Patrick's Day?
You know, Anne, I cannot surmise what that logic is. It's unfortunate because of even if for no other reason, just because we have parade routes and things like that. Mm-hmm. But and we'll have poll workers, longtime poll workers, maybe who serve every year as poll workers, but they also, you know, are volunteers at the Irish Fest, and so now they're torn in two places. I think we will find a lot of challenges with that. So it's another good reason for all of us to be vigilant, and it's a good reminder that cybersecurity is only one piece of this larger puzzle.
And as far as the ongoing funding for the technology that we need and the expertise, I know David Becker made the point that it is a moving target. It's not going to go away. It's something we just have to figure into our budgets from now on.
Absolutely. I mean, and we always should, right? That's the bottom line, is there's nothing about elections that should stay the same, right? So we at the league helped get mail-in voter registration passed in 1977, and then it took us decades to get to online voter registration, right? But the point was, we're now in a digital age and we should have new registration options. It doesn't matter if we're talking about voting machines or registration systems or cybersecurity measures. We need to continue to improve our election processes with the times.
Is there a sense that the battleground states are being more targeted than others?
And what do you mean by targeted?
Targeted by bad actors, by foreign, you know,
sure,
actors and that kind of a thing. Yeah.
I definitely think there's a sense that if they're not being targeted in terms of trying to monkey with the system itself, mm-hmm, and results, that there is, you know, all of those bots, all of those misinformation campaigns that are designed to build to erode trust, are really also eroding our ability to work together and see each other's community members. And I think there is a focus on battleground states in that way, to erode trust and to kind of erode our ability to see cross partisan lines and across voting beliefs. And that's unfortunate.
What are you hearing from people at the National Elections Protections Conference, your counterparts in other states? Do they have other concerns than what we've talked about today?
Yeah, I mean, the Election Protection Conference is actually the coalition that runs 866 Our Votes. And so we will talk about election security. I'm on a panel where we will talk about rapid response when you see a problem on, you know, in an election system, how you, you know, respond so that it helps protect as many voters as possible. But, you know, so for in 2018, as an example, 866 Our Vote, nonpartisan election, we didn't have cybersecurity problems per se, but we did have problems with poll workers not able to use the machine to check people in as well as they should. We did have problems with power outages in Northeast Ohio where paper ballots actually ran out. And so my job on election day is to be watching those tickets as people call in and then be making sure that counties and the state are dealing with those issues as best as possible to make sure that voters can vote in an easy and efficient and trusted and way. And so we will be talking everything from poll worker shortages to polling location changes to confusion about registration to things like Ohio's purge and supplemental process. So it's really literally the whole gamut of how a voter interacts with the system and making sure that that vote counts.
You were almost purged from the polls in the last purge,
no,
right?
No, not really.
Okay.
Not really. So the New York Times was not inaccurate, but it was confusing the way it was written. I was not going to be removed on September 6th. I was marked wrongfully for what's called confirmation status. So if that had not been corrected, that mistake, and time had gone by, I was like in the line. But it's a 6-year timeline, and I was in that 6-year timeline wrongfully as being in confirmation status.
Is that a technology problem or a human error? Do you know why that happened?
Yeah, it's both. And that's, it really is both. Registration systems are complicated. And actually, this is a place where I think Ohio needs to do a lot better. I think we are pretty good on cybersecurity. I think we are pretty good on the security of our machines and voting. I think we're pretty good on planning for elections. We'll see. It'll be put to test in 2020. But our registration systems have not been upgraded in a long time. And so that's what Senate Bill 194 is about, that just passed unanimously out of the Senate. And mm-hmm. I hope the Ohio House will pass soon and swiftly, but would actually vet registration database vendors for security and accuracy and quality control. But yeah, it was a combination. The problems that we saw in the inaccuracy during this last purge was really about somewhat human error and somewhat about technology errors. The great news is that we got that list in advance and we were able to clean it up and we were able to learn a lot of the problems. And the league continues to work with the Secretary of State's office on those issues. But Senate Bill 194 would help.
Another issue regarding the change of, I hate to keep jumping back and forth, but things are popping into my mind, but another change regarding the primary date is weather.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
We could have a blizzard.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think let's hope that we don't have a blizzard, both for the primary and also for anyone that's in a parade that day. But it's true. Middle of March is, you never know, right? Are we going to be in the lion or the lamb?
Yeah.
Who knows? But I'll just say this, that, if someone's worried about that and they can't work a full poll worker shift, which is all day from the time the polls open until they close, then do rides to the polls. Join the league in doing that. And that's a great way to serve voters.
As far as the poll worker shortage goes, that will hand in hand with that is training. Is there enough training?
Yeah, I mean, the training is pretty good. Everyone would have to go through training. A new policy that just changed, and we think this is great, is now a county can have lawyers participate and get continual legal education credits, or a social worker can get their continuing education credits as long as their county participates in the program. So that was an effort by several voting rights groups, as well as the election officials and the Secretary of State. But there is a pretty good training. Each county does it a little bit differently. You would have to attend one. That's part of the work.
Well, Jen Miller, I know you're real busy today at the National Elections Protections Conference in Washington, D.C., and I appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ann.
Jen Miller, Executive Director of the League of Women Voters of Ohio. We'll keep following election issues along the way and certainly dig down deeper into the genesis of St. Patrick's Day primary decision, voting day. What in the world was that all about? But thanks for listening today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.